January is when we recommit to the habits that support our health and well-being. And naturally, we start looking at what can support those goals, including supplements. But choosing the right supplements can be confusing, because not only are there so many brands out there, the supplement industry itself is a low-trust category. It's lightly regulated, products are easy to make, and companies don't even have to list everything on their label. Now, there's Momentous. They've become the high-trust brand in a low-trust category. They weren't satisfied with the industry standard, so they built the Momentous Standard, their commitment to doing things the right way, not the easy way. Momentous sources the highest quality ingredients on the planet. Their whey protein comes from grass-fed European dairy cows. Their creatine uses the purest form of creatine monohydrate, and every formula is made with clinically backed, highly bioavailable nutrients, with no fillers and no artificial sweeteners. Right now, Momentous is offering listeners up to 35% off your first order with promo code AudioBoom. Head to livemomentous.com and use promo code AudioBoom for up to 35% off your first order. That's livemomentous.com, promo code AudioBoom.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Give your walls the most advanced protection with Pittsburgh's Paramount Interior Paint and Primer in 1. It's scuff, scrub, and wear resistant, while also blocking stains and delivering true one coat coverage. Choose from thousands of color options and refresh your space for spring. View our entire selection of paint and accessories today on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to find great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro Cap News. It's Monday, the 23rd of June, 2025. And, well, what a weekend for news has been. Trump is... I don't know if you saw Trump's tweet. He did a big paragraph about bombing Iran. And in capitals was... Bomb. He's like a little kid, isn't he? Bomb. He puts things in capitals. We got bombs. Yes. Real big bombs. But hopefully, I think it'll settle down. Because Iran, you know, they are a crazy sort of absolute ruler. A nutter, basically, rules over them. I can't think most people are happy in that society. And, of course, they have sponsored states, you know, sponsored terrorism throughout the region. So... you take the power away from them. And they don't want to bring them to the table to discuss anything, because they won't discuss anything. But you know, taking that capability away from them is probably a good thing. So a bit of volatility in the markets, of course. But Brent crude, which did rise quite a bit, has come back a bit. And anyway, I tell you another exciting thing happening, actually, which is quite entertaining to watch, is a lot of these microcap companies, or nanocaps, I should say, announcing now they're going to have a Bitcoin treasury. So Bitcoin reserve, they're setting up this stuff, you know? And they're rallying like hell, like crazy, they're doubling, tripling. And it reminds me of the dot-com bubble. A company, all they have to do is change the end of the name to dot-com, and they have now an internet strategy, and they double overnight. They would literally double. And do you know what? I end up losing money during that period. Why? Because most of those companies now bust and collapse. And it'll sort of happen here, I suppose. But the thing about a question is, all these little companies that are setting up, you know, Bitcoin treasury reserves, most of them don't make any money. Most of them don't have any cash. So how are they going to fund their operations? If they're making a loss from their operations, how are they going to fund it? They're going to buy Bitcoin, and then they're going to just sell Bitcoin? It doesn't make any sense. And of course, if you have plenty of spare cash, and you assume Bitcoin's going to go up, then maybe store some in Bitcoin. But of course, if it goes down, then you're in trouble. This wouldn't happen with if you held money in cash, like in a market maker account, earning 3-4%. That's stable. It'll never go down, pretty much. But with Bitcoin, it can go down. So you will see, a lot of these companies rallying just on this news, like announcing, we're a new dot-com company. But in the short term, that'll happen. But in the longer term, many of these companies are going to struggle because they are loss-making. There's no... I don't believe there are any profitable companies that are setting up Bitcoin treasuries. It's good for the markets a little bit. It creates a bit of liquidity, you know, and people recycle the cash. So it's not a bad thing. I would say to you, be careful jumping on a company that's risen heck of a lot. Because if they haven't got cash, they'll still have to raise money. Just because they pretend they're owning some Bitcoin doesn't make a difference, you know, because they are loss-making companies. at the end of the day, and they have to fund their operations through cash, or if they've got Bitcoin, selling Bitcoin. But do they have any cash? I know some of them do, but you think, well, you've got to use that cash, haven't you? So be careful, because if you are an investor, you know, for the medium long term, it's very tempting to see some of these rises and jump in. But like I said, if you look at the dot-com bubble, and a lot of these companies did, in fact, it's starting to remind me of the bubble, dot-com bubble. Everyone on just jumping onto this, and companies going nuts. When companies rise like this, it is a bubble. I mentioned in the book, I didn't realize it was a bubble at the time. You never do. You look back and it's popped and you think, oh my word, that was so obvious. But so be careful, because, you know, gains of like, 100% in a day are not normal. They're abnormal. And that signifies we're probably in a bubble area in that sector of the market. And what'll happen is you get now a lot of crap companies seeing the rises in these companies and adopting the same strategy. And so you'll have like 60 companies, 70 companies, 100 companies, maybe little crap, you know, substandard businesses jumping on this Bitcoin treasury. And if it gives their price, a share price, a rise, you know, a pump, then they probably have to raise money. After all, you have to have money, cash, to buy Bitcoin. And then if Bitcoin does start dropping, and in fact, look at the chart. I own a bit of Bitcoin. Look at the chart of Bitcoin. It doesn't look very clever. You've got a high at 22nd of May, and then it 111,000. It dipped down to 101,000 the 6th of June. Then the second high was lower than the first high. On the 9th of June, it went 110. Now it's rolling over, down below 50-day moving average, and it's now retesting that 101 level. And it does look at so it's a lower high. So be careful, because if this drops, then pretty much, you know, those companies are going to have to sell their Bitcoin, and they will be a leveraged play on Bitcoin anyway. So they will move very quickly to the downside. And in fact, I think yesterday Bitcoin did spike down. I got an alert overnight saying it had gone down through 100,000. So be careful. And like I said, if these companies, lots of companies are adopting this strategy, they will have to sell. And that'll make the Bitcoin price more volatile. And it's a catch-22 situation. Like I said, a bit of fun. Don't treat it like it's going to make you rich, because these companies probably won't be around in a year or two time. But if you want a bit of fun with it, have a go with it. But be careful. Like I said, for me, it's not for me, because it's not the kind of company I want to put lots of money into to get a decent return. You know, if you talk about small amounts of money, it's fine. It's a bit of fun. But don't believe you're going to get rich off these companies unless you manage to buy one at the bottom and it went crazy and you forgot about it. And then you can sell now. But be careful. It's a bit of fun. It may help a little liquidity in the markets in the short term. But it's not a way to get rich quickly. It's normally a way to get rich poor very quickly, okay? There's no substitute for buying very good businesses that are performing. And if you're looking for long-term gains, that's where you should put your money. Not into these pop-and-drop stocks that may pop, but they will drop, and sometimes they can go bust. So be careful of the Bitcoin price. When everyone's sort of bullish on a certain sector of the market, it's time to exit. Like I say, you get more and more noise about Bitcoin, and it's failed to hit a new high after a second rally. We have a lower high, and it's rolling over a bit. So be careful. We can never tell Bitcoin. You know, it's on steroids. It can rally like crazy sometimes. But good luck with it. But don't chuck all your money into these stocks. I say a bit of fun. That's all they are. Okay. Let's look at the markets here quickly. FTSE 100, down 0.25%, 8753. FTSE 250, it's down 0.3%, 21077. The FTSE small cap is down 0.5% to 70056. The AIM all share down 0.15% to 758. We needed to break that previous high of 679, 670, really. We're still in bull market territory. And I think the backdrop here of anything, regardless of the wars going on, and it's amazing, is it now? You almost have each new war takes priority and takes up more headlines than the previous war that's still ongoing. So we sort of started off with Russia invading Ukraine. That was a big war. And we tend to get so used to this. The markets don't get that wobbled unless it's going to affect them, you know, economically, financially. And even though there's still terrible things going on in Ukraine, of course there is, the market shrugs it off after a while. You get the initial reaction and it bounces back up. And so it suggests to me, I mean, you know, and then we went to Israel, Gaza, and now it's you know, Israel, America, and Iran. And yet the markets have an initial shock and they rebound. I think the markets want to go higher. I really do. And this is the backdrop is interest rates coming down. That's the most powerful force of the markets. You know, politicians, presidents, prime ministers come and go. Policies come and go. But interest rates are there to stay and they're coming down. And that's the most powerful moving force over the long term for the markets. And like I say, I do believe now the next decision we have for the Bank of England, they'll probably bring interest rates down. So that's good for the markets generally. Good for the economy, of course. For the markets obviously rally ahead of the economy because they see what's happening. They try and price in what's going to happen, whereas the economy is in catch up to that. Okay, what else did I get to there? Oh, Bitcoin, yeah. Bitcoin, let's look at that. It's like I said, it's 101,000. Yes. Lots of strategy buys $26 million of Bitcoin. That's Michael Saylor's business. That's, again, there'll be so many. If Bitcoin really gets hammered, the worry is, of course it could rise. Of course it could. And I, you know, why I got a bit of Bitcoin is because I think the fact that it's not been hacked in, what, 15 years now suggests to me it's very good technology. I don't know what it's used for. Maybe it's store of value now. It's not a currency, of course. But if it does gap down, you get some of these big early adopting whales who held a lot of it selling and it gaps down and moves down quickly, then a lot of companies could be in trouble. There's a lot of companies doing this, you know, leverage play on Bitcoin. And so they'll have to liquidate, which will push the price down further, of course, and it'll be a domino effect. So that's what I'm worried about now. A lot of sort of companies, small companies, large companies, you know, investment theses are based around Bitcoin's price. And they just assume it's always going up. Don't assume that. It may go up in the longer term, but if it does have this, you know, any kind of flash crash down or draws down by like 20-30%, which it can do, it's done quite a few times, then there'll be a lot of distress in the market. Okay, so Bitcoin is it's up a fifth of 1% to 101. Let's look at commodities. Brent crude. Do you know, Brent crude, since the low on the 7th of May, it's up 30% pretty much, $77.39 a barrel. What else we got? Gold, it's up a little bit here at $3,390 an ounce. I think, do you know what? That's a safer play on uncertainty, to be honest, gold. Copper, it's down a quarter of 1%. Where are we with copper? Yeah, $10,629. Again, still sort of just a bit above midway between the high and the low of the year. Yeah, I always think of China with the copper because, of course, they are the biggest of global eaters, or users of copper. They just, you know, eat it up. And, of course, they've got problems with property and stuff like that. But and also Iran, actually. You know, Iran's biggest buyer of their oil is China. And they're now threatening, in Parliament, they've pushed through this threat to shut down this strait where all the oil passes through. 20% of the world oil passes through this strait. I can't think of what the strait's called. But that would have a problem. But, I mean, it would be economic suicide for Iran. They're not a strong economy anyway, but what they rely on is oil. And if they shut down this strait, everything's, you know, passed through, with all these ships and containers and oil tankers passed through, then it'll kill them. So I can't see why they do that. So very odd. Okay, I don't think they will do that. I mean, they've got very left they can do, Iran. They're a weakened force now. They can threaten to do that. They may do that, but again, it's. I suppose the trouble is it's run by the people at the top who don't care about the general public. And so the people at the top are not going to suffer unless there's regime overhaul, overthrow, unless there's a revolution there. But so I don't suppose that will bother them. Let's go to the government bonds. A 2-year is at 3.9% exactly. It's down a fifth of 1%. The 10-year yield is 4.5%. again, down a fifth of 1%. And the 30-year is at 5.2. It's down 0.6%. A pound will buy you €1.16. It'll buy you $1.33. Anything else? No, that's it. Okay, let's look at the microcap database. These are companies that are generating revenue, you know, above 100 million. They're releasing some news there, and I literally look at them to see if they're going to be added to the microcap league. I've just had a new section added to the website. Very happy about that. It's still being tweaked, but it's doing what it's supposed to do, and this is to enable people to find winners. I'm not going to tell you about it. If you want to learn about it, and listen, it took me less than £3 a week to become a member. Now, if you can't earn money more than that for the data that's on my site, then maybe you should just invest in funds, okay? Because you should be earning a lot more money than that from the data that's supplied on the site. Okay, start off with Afrn, A-F-R-N, trading update. And they do say, what do they say? There's no broker forecast for this. But they say, let's have a look. H1 trading update shows decent top-line growth. What do they do? I have no idea. Market cap, 4.2 million. Enterprise value, 14 million. It's got a debt of 11 million. They're a B2B video streaming solutions company. Our end-to-end solution brings live and on-demand video to every kind of screen. What, a bit like Zoom, you mean? To every kind of screen. You can't boast that in these days. You know, any streaming service should fit any type of screen. Round screens, square screens, all kinds of screens. Anyway, H1 trading update. They said decent top line growth, 36%, but their balance sheet is so weak, it's on life support. And even though they state adjusted EBITDA on its own is poor enough a metric. You know, it's substandard. It's not profitability. And now you're adjusting it. For heaven's sake. It's like someone wearing a really bad wig, you know, and then adjusting it. Saying, does this make it look better? No, it's a bad wig, and you've adjusted it to the right a little bit. It's still a bad wig, you know? It's not real hair. That's adjusted EBITDA. Profitability is real hair. Adjusted EBITDA is a wig. Anyway, adjusted EBITDA for the period is anticipated to be in the range of 1.6 million to 1.8 million, representing a material improvement on the adjusted EBITDA loss of 2.3 reported in H1 full year 24. Now, there will still be loss-making. As I said, EBITDA is a wig. It's not profit. And this is a concern because the market cap is $4 million and the net debt is $14.2 million. They state that the company remains in discussions to refinance its lending facilities. So the share price may rally if the bank extend or improve their lending facilities, but it will be a near-death relief rally. As a reminder, they did say in their going concern that basically, if they can't get these funds or the extensions, it would cast significant doubt on their ability to continue as a going concern. So, no, need I say any more? No. So, Afrn, basically, yeah, avoid, if it gets approval for banking authorities, then it may rally. Next, One Health Group. I own a few of these. They IPO'd a while back. Their market cap is 24 million. Enterprise value, 14 million. So, they've got about 10 million in cash. The final results out today. And what do they do? I quite like this because essentially they provide independent provider of free NHS care for patients referred through the patient choice of treatment in orthopedics, spine, general surgery and gynecology. So they're literally helping cut the waiting list for NHS. And that waiting list will be there forever. There's no way you're going to cut that waiting list down. It's about 7 million patients now, I think, on the waiting list. So basically, NHS pay for them to do this outside, and they've got their own surgeons and all that stuff. And they're also opening up a new surgical hub themselves. The moment they rent space in other surgeries, they're all going to start up you know, getting their own hubs, which would be a lot more profitable, of course. And, of course, they've got the asset backing as well of that hub then. Anyway, so where's my comments here? OHGR's 2025 final results were an improvement on 2024. Revenue increased by 23% to 28 million. Profit before tax was up 43% to 1.5 million. Net cash increased 155% to 9.1 million. They pay a dividend of 2.36. And they state post-period end trading in the first quarter has remained strong. Forecasts are for a slight revenue increase of 2%, but net profit next year is expected to be up 54%. Now, at 175 per share, this would put them on a PE of 13. However, this does not account for cash, so the EV earnings ratio is just 8. Brokers state that One Health continues to offer investors good value, a way of gaining exposure to pressure on the NHS to reduce waiting lists. With the shares trading on an undemanding EBITDA multiple of less than 6, feels too cheap to us for a company growing its top line north of 20% and EBITDA more than 10% before we factor in the hub. We continue to value the shares on 10 times EV EBITDA, given the price of £2.64. This will likely increase to north of £3 once we factor in the hub. So they're now at 187. They're up 7% today. But they're saying that, of course, it should be more than £3 once they get this hub up. And when's it going to be? They've got planning coming soon, I think. They've got another one in the pipeline as well, another hub coming. But, yeah, so worth a watch. They're an interesting company. Check it out. Let's go for the next one. So One Health Group, OHGR, is worth looking at, I think. And, of course, owner-operated, which is quite nice. Let's look at the chairman and founder, Derek Bickerstaff, holds 32.5%. Always like to see that. And you find companies that tend to do very well or outperform the herd. Put it this way, it's a high correlation of successful companies that are founder-led. Because, of course, it's their legacy. They've lived with it. It's not just a manager being brought in, a CEO being brought in, being paid a wage. It's they've created it. It's their baby. They work harder. It's their livelihood, their lifestyle. Petards is next. Pegasus ticker. Petard. What did they release there? Was it half year results or full year? Final results. Petards. Just change the name for heaven's sake. They're focused on the development, supply, and maintenance of technologies used in advanced security, surveillance, and ruggedized electronic applications. Market cap 4.9 million. Enterprise value 7.3. So got a bit of debt there. Let's go straight on the comments here. Their 2024 results did not improve on 23. Okay, revenue increased by 28%, 12 million, but so did their loss before tax, up 20% to 1.3 million. Their net debt growth was the most impressive. It shot up by 570% to 2.4 million. Their forecast to grow top line by 25% in 25, but will still be loss-making, so it means their balance sheet will continue to be weak. Their net debt is now half the size of the market cap. They have around, from what I can work out, about 800k headroom left on the debt ceiling. And they say in the going concern, the board has concluded, after reviewing the work performed and detailed above, that there is a reasonable expectation that the group has adequate resources to continue in operation until at least the 30th June 2026. Now, I don't know about you, for you, but for me, to invest in a company, I'd want more than a reasonable expectation, that the company will survive until next year. So, yeah, not impressive, really, there. Petards! Ignore that. It's such a petard. Safe Stay. SSTY, market cap of 16 million, enterprise value 41. It's like a debt of 26 million there. Is this final results? Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, final results here. They were an improvement on 2023, but this does not mean they were particularly good. Revenue increased by 5%, loss before tax improved by 46% to 407K. It's a loss. However, net debt increased by 19% to 25.3 million. There are no broker numbers here, even though the broker said they would provide a more detailed note after the final results, but they haven't. They do state in their outlook statement, during H1 2025, consumer confidence has remained under pressure, resulting in a continued competitive pricing environment. Despite these pressures, forward bookings are running at a satisfactory level. They also say, with several further expansion opportunities being appraised, the board remains highly confident that SafeStay is well-placed to deliver its medium-term ambitions of doubling the size of its portfolio. Of course, I mean, further expansion, I would assume, means more debt, and the net debt is already larger than their market cap. So you've got 25 million in net debt, 16 million in market cap. A small loss-making company with a lot of debt operating in an environment where consumer confidence is under pressure does not strike me as a compelling investment case. So I'm going to say SafeStay, it's not safe to stay there with your money. Mulberry Group came out with a fundraise, right? And this is a car crash of a company, really. Mulberry, the handbags, all that stuff. What are they? 73 million market cap, enterprise value 97, so they've got debt. But what's interesting, right, about this is they've raised 20 million. Is that the story's interesting, but the fundamentals are dreadful, right? In September 2024, a new CEO, Andrea Baldo, he's Italian, so Andrea in our country is a female, isn't it? But in Italy, oh, no, I'm Andrea. So it's a man. He was appointed to turn the company round. He conducted a strategic review, and it came up with a strategy called Back to the Mulberry Spirit. Yeah, well done, Andrea. You should call him Andrea, actually. Andrea? And it's Andrea. Okay, Andrea. Anyway, they got this strategy. Now, the company raised $10 million in September at £1. Just announced the intention to raise another $20 million. They haven't announced the price of placing. Usually, I would ignore a company like this. In fact, I am going to ignore it. But what's interesting is the reason why they're able to raise this amount of money, okay, when they're struggling and the backdrop for luxury brands isn't exactly rosy. The biggest shareholder on the register is Chalice Limited. They hold 56.43%. Chalice Limited is owned by Mr. Ong Beng Sang, otherwise known as OBS. Now, Melissa Ong is his daughter, who also holds stock in Chalice, which is the 56% holder. And she's also the chairman of the Nominations and Remuneration Committee for Mulberry. Now, OBS, the father, is a Singapore-based Malaysian billionaire businessman. He's the founder of the Singapore-based organisation Hotel Properties Limited, which is a shareholder of various businesses, including Hard Rock Resorts and Four Seasons Resorts across Europe and Asia. So they said, Chalice, they'd be willing to underwrite the $20 million fundraise if required. So it's safe to say that Mulberry will have no issue raising money until it gets to profitability. The question is, will they get there and how long will it take? By the way, the second biggest shareholder of the shares is Fraser Group. They hold 37% and made an offer for the company at $150 a share in October, which was rejected by Chalice. So if they do show signs of recovery, then this company will do well. But for now, that recovery is not in sight. Revenue is expected to drop by 22% for 25, and the loss before tax is forecast to be $23 million, which is versus $34 million loss in 2024. So it may be worth watching because it's one of these companies, they do turn over a lot. And if they can get back to anywhere near former glories, and they're not going to worry about the bank sheet, their balance sheet so much because they've got these billionaires and millionaires behind them holding a big chunk of shares. So I think maybe not this year, maybe not next year, I don't know when, but it could be a recovery play. But because the biggest worry for any company that's making a loss, of course, is cash. And that isn't a worry here. Unless the billionaire decides, I'm not going to bother anymore. But his daughter's on, one of the directors. And she's also a holder of Chalice. And up behind that, you've got Fraser Group, who want to make an offer of the company. So it's a very interesting backstory, but it's, fundamentally, like I said, it's a car crash. And finally, Orchard Funding. This came out on Friday. I missed this, so I'm busy with the website. There's a new feature I've got on the website, which I'm quite liking. Through its wholly owned subsidiaries, Bexhill UK Limited and Orchard Funding Limited, is a finance group which specialises in insurance premium finance and the professional fee funding market. Now, they are a market cap of 13 million, Enterprise is only 52. So you think they have a lot of debt, but that debt is not... It's basically... Their balance sheet is like a bank's. Assets are its liabilities because they're loans. They're also assets. So I wouldn't pay much attention to the EV here. Now, they came out with... what was it? Sorry. They came out with a trading update. Okay. And they did say... Management now expect that financial year 2025 earnings will exceed current market expectations by over 20%. The broker forecasts for 2025 show revenue growth 39%, net profit growth 69%. At 65 pence a share, that would put them on a forecast PE of just 5.2. However, this type of business is valued in relation to its net asset value, which is 89 pence a share. Although forecast NAV is 99 pence a share. Where are they now? They're 63 pence. So that's over 50% up. So they have growth and seems decent value. Will benefit from interest rates coming down as well. So if interest rates are coming down, it will help because it will boost their net interest margin. However, this company is not without risks. It's worth keeping an eye on their expected credit losses, which at the moment seem to be improving. They're coming down. Worth noting, the company shows to a lot of debt. Like I said, most of that's made up from loans to companies, so it's an asset as well. Okay, so interesting with an ORCH sticker. Worth checking out there. That's it for the podcast. By all means, if you want to join the club, and I think it's worth it, I really do. If you want to earn money, if you want to learn and you want to earn money, then make an investment in yourself. No one in life gets anywhere without investing in themselves. You've got, rather than spending, you know, money on stuff that's crap, put £3 away to invest in yourself and find out what makes stocks win, what makes microcap stocks win. I've just released another, in fact, a good article will go out soon on big winners. I've done quite a few of those blog posts on there, but it's worth checking out. And you realise where big winners come from and what's more likely to make a big winner over the long term. Anyway, thanks for listening. If you listen to the podcast and you don't find it too annoying or too boring, or if you do, don't worry about that, and you get some value from it, by all means, please give me a review if you could, because then more people would find the podcast and more people would get bored by me. Yeah, come on, join the gang. have a nice weekend. No, it's not weekend. What are you talking about? It's Monday. I will be doing a podcast tomorrow, hopefully. Have a nice weekend. God, I skipped a few days there, didn't I? Anyway, have a nice Monday afternoon and we'll speak to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Please do your own research.
Hey, this is Bayard Winthrop, founder of American Giant. Back in 2011, I was fed up, sick of cheap disposable clothes that fell apart after a few washes, and even more sick of the fact that almost nothing good was made here anymore. So I started American Giant to prove something. That we could still make the absolute best hoodies, t-shirts, and pants right here in America with American cotton, American factories, and American workers earning real wages. We exist to bring manufacturing home, create good jobs in towns that need them, and build clothes that actually last. No shortcuts, no overseas compromises. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
Hey, this is Bayard Winthrop, founder of American Giant. Back in 2011, I was fed up. Sick of cheap disposable clothes that fell apart after a few washes, and even more sick of the fact that almost nothing good was made here anymore. So I started American Giant to prove something, that we could still make the absolute best hoodies, T-shirts and pants right here in America, with American cotton, American factories, and American workers earning real wages. We exist to bring manufacturing home, create good jobs in towns that need them, and build clothes that actually last. No shortcuts, no overseas compromises. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com.